Hello, everyone, and welcome to Awakening Into Life, a podcast series that is devoted to the exploration of non-duality, self-realization, and the embodiment of awakening. My name is Bradley, and I am a teacher of non-dual contemplative wisdom with a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. I have spent the last 7 years working as a non-dual teacher, guide, counselor, coach, and mentor, helping people move through this curious journey of awakening that can many times be very confusing, disorienting, disturbing, and difficult. This particular episode is about my own awakening journey. It is part one in a 6-part series that goes through what the first couple of years of awakening looked like for me. And then I provide an update in the last couple of episodes in this particular series, an update of what my life looks like now, 5 years after the original talk was given. So I want to invite you to bring your own sort of sense of curiosity and interest, whatever in you feels maybe cautious or skeptical, whatever in you seems to be looking for something, and just bring your ear, bring your awareness, bring your heart into a position of listening. And perhaps you might hear something in my own story, in my own journey, that touches you where you are and can offer some small comfort. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the first part my awakening story. Well, welcome everybody. So tonight I'm going to take a little different tact. It's something that I don't really usually do it this way. Tonight I'm going to talk a lot about my own journey. And I think it's valuable for us to be able to share in the kinds of experiences that each and every one of us have as we go along this journey. I think we can draw parallels in terms of where we ourselves have stood and where we may find ourselves at any given point in time. It's also good because it helps give us that sense of, you know, we're not alone in this thing. That a lot of people undergo these kinds of transformative experiences that take you to that place where maybe you don't know what's real and what's not real anymore, and things become very confusing. So I'm going to talk a lot about the things that I went through. And I'm going to try to summarize a lot of things because there really is a lot to cover. But before I do, I want to say that what I'm going to talk about is it's in relation to phenomenal experiences, right? So it's this person, Brad, having these experiences in the world. And it's important to recognize that these experiences themselves aren't like, they're not like isolated, linear, you know, things that stand on their own and, you know, are meant to be, they're not things to cling to, and they're not things to get caught on, they're not things to stay stuck with. They're events that occur almost more as if a mirror. So, you know, as we're going through life, we're generally engaging in life from an egoic point of view, from an egoic position, from the position of the mind. Because we're looking at the world from that conditioned viewpoint. We are seeing it a certain way. And as
divine consciousness begins to present itself to us, it has to use the mechanisms with which we're familiar in order to get our attention. And then it draws us more deeply into its own essence. And eventually, all of these experiences stop being experiences. And it becomes part of this movement that you've always been in and didn't necessarily recognize the totality of, or the expression of, or where it was leading. So, like I said, I'm going to talk about a lot of different experiences, but ultimately what I want to point out is the fact that these experiences give way to recognizing that experience itself is just a fleeting aspect of being, of experiencing reality, of being present. And these things are things that do happen in a linear way. They happen in time. And they happen in a way that engages us in our expression of humanity, engages us in the mind and engages us in the heart and invites us more deeply. And there's a lot of stuff. Hello.
Hey, hi.
And there's a lot of stuff that may defy rational logic, a lot of rational logic. And so I'm going to break into some of that tonight. The other thing I'm going to say is that, you know, whenever we reflect upon past experiences in any way, shape, or form whatsoever, we have to always understand that the memory itself is not a trustworthy or reliable mechanism. Memory is a way in which we engage past experiences with, you know, the understanding of where we are now. And we may view it in a way that doesn't necessarily encapsulate what it really was or what really happened. We may be adding to it based on other experiences and other conditions and other adventures or experiences that kind of been added to it. We may see it in a different light further down the road because something becomes more clear about a particular experience. Perhaps one experience over here and another experience and another experience and another experience all begin to, you begin to see the interrelation between them. So in the very beginning, I think this is probably true of most people that do find themselves kind of going through this process of awakening. But there was this sincerity and this earnestness to want to be free from the suffering that I was experiencing in my own life. And so I was 42 years old, and I always say I was an atheist and an asshole, and that is putting it lightly. I had been raised in the Catholic faith, and I had been exposed to all kinds of lovely Christian dogmas. I had done a lot of reading and studying. When I was a teenager, I read a lot of kind of the occult stuff, and I was very interested. Like, I read the whole Left Behind series, and like, so I was very interested in the apocalypse, and you know, what all that stuff was going to be about. And then when I was a later teenager, I joined the military and I spent several years doing that, traveled, but I stepped away from the Catholic faith, and I really, really felt like I didn't have any particular direction or any particular belief system. Nothing really spoke to me. More so than anything else, what spoke to me was science. The raw, you know, the raw statistics, the raw data, you know, stuff that's experimental and observable and things that we can prove. And, you know, so I was really wedded to the study of science. So from the time I was about 20 until the time I was in my mid-30s, that was really how I was examining everything. To me, the universe presented itself as, you know, this, you know, cosmic accident, right? And here we all are because this happened, and then this happened, and this happened. This is one accident after another, and poof, here we are. And we're looking back and trying to tell ourselves stories about all that. So I wasn't interested in stories. I was interested in science. So I studied physics and quantum mechanics and astronomy and really, just really loved all of that. But there was nothing there, right? You know, there's nothing in science that can actually answer our questions. There's nothing in science that can really provide anything meaningful. It can be really interesting. It's like, oh, look, we're studying dark matter now. So what is it that we think dark matter is? I don't know. There are 15 different theories, you know. So, you know, which theory do you want to play with. I don't know. None of them can be experimentally proven. So, you know, they're interesting. Interesting. Science is interesting. But you can't really find, you know, it doesn't tell us why. Science doesn't have the ability to tell us why. It can tell us how, to some degree, within a certain kind of experience. But it doesn't tell us why. So we're left with why. And why is a question for philosophers and, you know, students of spiritual theories or religious leaders. It's a subject for poets, you know, and dreamers. And why is a question that science can't answer. So I was living in Seattle. I'd left the military, and I was living in Seattle, and I was married at the time to my second wife. And things were going kind of difficult. And I remember one day there was a copy of one of the Dalai Lama's books on the back of the toilet. I had no interest in religion. I had no interest in it. It was all complete nonsense. All complete nonsense. So I picked up this book by the Dalai Lama and I just started flipping through it. And I probably made it through 5-10 pages, something like that. But I found something very beautiful there. And I was like, oh, well, this is interesting. This is different. This isn't like, you know, there's nobody jumping up and down on a stage screaming about how, you know, hellfire and damnation, and, you know, there's no dude that I have to give it all to in order to, you know, this is a philosophy, and it's a way of being. And it was quite beautiful. It was quite inviting. So I went and got Buddhism for Dummies. Buddhism for Dummies. What a wonderful book. I used to have all these, you know, whenever I was interested in a subject, I would go get a dummies book on it because it was great introductory material, and then you're able to kind of look at where to go next for more information. So I had this Buddhism for Dummies book, and I started really getting into the study of Buddhism, but again, being very skeptical, which is something that remains with me, being very skeptical, wanting to see proof or to have proof, And so I was most interested in the most direct teachings that I could find from the Buddha, which according to what I was studying at that time was talking about the Theravada Buddhist tradition, the oldest surviving branch of Buddhism, very much of a conservative branch of Buddhism that didn't really have much of a religious tone to it at all. It was very philosophical, again, a way of being. And so I started practicing with the Seattle Insight Meditation Society, and I was learning Vipassana, which is insight meditation, which is just kind of a breathing through the nose and an awareness. And I was studying, the person who led that was Rodney Smith, and he was a wonderful person. You know, he always confused me because he always had this edge to him, but he like ran the hospice program for Seattle for like 30 years, and he had spent like 10 years as a Buddhist monk, and you know, and he worked, you know, he just did all this beautiful work, but he had this edge to him, and I was like, aren't you supposed to be like really peaceful and loving? And you know, he was, but he had this edge. So I did that for a little while, and then I was really having some wonderful experiences, you know, just in terms of meditation. Because to me at the time, meditation was just a way to calm my mind down and to get a grip. Just calm down and get a grip. And so I was practicing it just with that in mind. The Buddha said all kinds of stuff that didn't make any sense to me, and I had no interest whatsoever in. A lot of the stuff that I would see in the Buddhist text, they were just way off in the distance for me. I just wanted to calm down a little bit. I don't know what else he's talking about. Sounds like a bunch of shit to me. I'm just going to focus on this one little thing over here, this thing called meditation. And then I went through a second divorce and basically left everything behind for like 10 years. For 10 years, didn't have any spiritual practice, any belief system. It was all back in science. I wasn't doing any meditation. I had practiced in that tradition for maybe about a year and a half, practicing that Vipassana, and then took a 10-year break. And I was in another relationship that I had been in for quite some time, almost my third wife. We had been together for probably 6 years at that point. And I was again having some very significant difficulties, but this time it was heavier. It was more weighty. It was more more difficult, more challenging, to the point where I was basically avoiding absolutely everyone. So I was living in a way where I spent all of my time watching television and playing video games. Like, here I am, and I'm an adult, right? And I had all these activities that were really about taking me out of the world and drawing me into a fantasy. Because I did not want to deal with the real world. And I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. I hated my life in every way that you can possibly imagine. And I started noticing that I was watching like really dark television shows, and some of the stuff was really disturbing to me because I found myself very interested in some of the stuff. I was like, wow, you know, if I could get away with this, or if I could get away with all that, you know. And so I found myself becoming really disturbed by a lot of that. I became disturbed by the amount of anger that I was carrying with me and the way I reacted to everything around me. I hated myself. It was one of those situations where, you know, if there was something happening around me, I never trusted myself to deal with it or handle it. I always figured I was going to do it wrong anyway, so why bother? I mean, there was this whole set of thoughts that were going on. One of the biggest things, though, is that I would lie. I would exaggerate significant, I would really add significant exaggerations to things, you know, and a lot of it was coming from this place of insecurity. I didn't love myself, I didn't trust myself, I didn't have any confidence at all in myself, and, you know, I basically, you know, spent my time wondering, when's it over, you know? And then I got to this place where enough was enough. I really couldn't handle living that way anymore, being so drawn into a fantasy that didn't offer anything. It was very lonely. It was a very, very lonely place to be, and it hurt. It hurt. It hurt very deeply. And so this thing, this sincerity, this earnestness, for me, it came up when I sat down with a psychologist. And I was terrified. I was terrified. I didn't want to go. And I remember sitting in the chair across from the psychologist. By the way, a lot of the things I'm going to talk about tonight have a lot of synchronistic qualities to them. A lot of synchronistic qualities. And I'll explain that a little bit more later. So the psychologist I ended up going seeing, his name was Dr. Love, which was, you know, that was the beginning of me seeing how things were coming to fruition for me. Dr. Love was an interesting person. I had been doing a lot of research on all of these symptoms, all these things that I was experiencing, and I did all kinds of study on different treatment methods, and I went and found a psychologist that dealt with treatment methods that had high rates of success, and I was like, all right, I'm going to go do this. But I was terrified sitting in front of him. I didn't want to be there. I remember the whole time all I wanted to do was run. But I was so... I wanted so badly to get beyond this place that I was in my life, that I forced myself to sit in that chair and forced myself to come to terms with myself in a way that I had never done so before. And it wasn't necessarily that he was really asking me anything. It was more just the willingness to sit in the chair, the willingness to do whatever it took in order to take the first step, to take the first step. There was a lot of other stuff going on at the time, and it was all very ugly and very difficult. But I sat there, and at the time, I wanted to be a better man. That was my goal. I want to be a better man. Like, I want to be a better man. And that moved into a place where it was like, well, what I really want to do is find a more authentic me. Because I wanted to be a better man, but I didn't want to be a better man for me. I was like, you know what? This sucks for me. But, you know, I can, you know, whatever. But at least, you know, this person I'm with, she deserves something more than what I'm offering. So I want to be a better man for her. And so I had these conversations with Dr. Love about wanting to be a better man for her. And then it switched into, you know, wanting to find a more authentic me. We generally tend to put on masks, play roles. We pretend to be the person that we think everyone wants us to be. And so we hold up a mask and we play that role and we pretend to be that person basically for whatever audience we're in front of. But it's a question of how it's being held and the position from which it's being viewed, right? There's a root of unworthiness at the core of it, right? Whereas within this thing called enlightenment, there's just, you know, it's empty of needing to defend anything. It's empty of needing to control anything. It's a whole different flavor. But a lot of the kinds of things that you see come forward, there's it's almost like you got enlightenment wrong here, here, and here. And if you just fix these two or three things, you'd actually have a better understanding of what it is you've been carrying with you the whole time. There are parts of it that you get, but there are also ways in which you're confusing this, the truth of what you may be carrying with you, ways in which you're confusing it that are causing pain instead of opening it up to beauty. Right? So these are all kind of events that were leading up to this experience of awakening. And it was maybe for about, maybe about two weeks, I started having these other experiences that were happening on a daily basis. So one of the big ones was shifting from an outward to an inward view. And what I mean by that is I used to live my life, you know, again, I was unworthy, so I was looking for validation from external sources. So I couldn't live my own experience. I had to experience myself through others. I had to experience myself by basically saying, hey, look, I like this, or hey, look, I like that, and pointing these things out to the person I was with. And if she didn't like it or she did like it, it validated me or it diffused me, it broke me, right? And so there was always this whole thing of, you know, finding validation outward things. And so one of the big shifts for me was this experience of kind of turning things inward and letting go of that desire, being wary or being conscious of that desire to want that, to be able to go into these situations and say, okay, I see myself enjoying something, and I see myself wanting to share it, and I see myself expecting to get something from that, and I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to be here in my experience. I am going to fully appreciate my own experience, and I am going to be fully in my own experience, and I'm not going to concern myself with anything outside of myself in order to be fully present with this experience. So that was a huge, huge, huge shift. Another one was this kind of experience of emergence, of kind of finding myself for the first time or meeting myself for the first time. That question of asking, where is the more authentic me, led to stripping away these layers and layers and layers. And at a certain point, I met myself. At a certain point, I kind of went, oh, well, that looks like Brad. And, you know, it was an interesting experience. It was kind of it fizzled out. It was just a very kind of brief momentary exposure. I was also working a lot with mantras that I had kind of created for myself. You know, one of those was, when I pretend to know everything, I fail to learn from those around me, which was one thing that I had been regularly guilty of. And I think when we look at our lives and we look at ways in which we're experiencing difficulty, if we're honest with ourselves about some of the things that we're doing to ourselves, we can create for ourselves kind of mantras or things to hold in mind that we can stir and remember within our experience, just to kind of keep us grounded in being truthful and honest with ourselves. So that was a big one too, right? You know, when I pretend to know everything, I failed to learn from those around me, and you know, just missing out on their experiences and their wisdom. Lots and lots of these little activities. The day that I had this experience of awakening, the actual experience that has been with me since it occurred, was I had some chores around the house that I had to do, and one of them was working on a door frame, fixing a door frame in a bathroom. And the other thing was nailing down this little carpet runner thing. And I was trying to, and it was trying to do it in cement, and I had to have special tools and all this kind of crap. And it wasn't going well. It was not going well. I spent probably 2 hours trying to get this, 2 or 3 hours trying to get this carpet runner thing in, and I just couldn't do it, couldn't do it, couldn't do it. And I was in a, I was just livid beyond belief. I was so angry, I was in a rage, and because that's just the way I did things. Normally, I would get to a place where I would try and I would fail and I go, oh, well, I guess it's not, you know, I'm not even going to bother. And I would go and just sit and watch TV and, you know, it, I would ignore it. But this particular time, I chose to stick with it and stick with it and stick with it and stick with it, no matter how angry I got, no matter how, no matter how uncooperative the task was. Decided to stay with it, stay with it. Until I got to a point where I'm like, okay, I don't have the tools for this. We really do have to have somebody else do this because I'm out of my depth now. And it wasn't me kind of turning away because I didn't want to do it. It was me turning away because I was being honest with myself and saying I've reached the limits of my expertise. So I decided to shift my attention to the door because I'm like, well, I still have this other project I have to do. This one didn't work out. I'm still in a rage, 2-3 hours in this kind of mode of rage. But I'm going to shift my attention to the door. And what I was doing with the door was, when I had first installed it, it had a little bit of an angle to it. So I was kind of loosening some things up to fix the angle. And so I'm taking 2 or 3 hours to do that, and at a certain point, I broke the door. The door, the frame split as I was trying to get. So at this point, I'm in, you know, really like 5 or 6 hours, 5 or 6 hours of mindful rage. Of mindful rage. And I'm not talking about, oh, I'm angry this didn't go my way. I'm talking about full-blown, you know, the vein in the side of your neck pumping rage. Mindfully, not allowing it to grab me and not allowing myself to fall into it or to use it as an excuse or to, you know, none of that. It was just being with it. And I decided that, all right, I need to do something about this rage. I need a book on rage, because that's what I did. I read everything. I studied everything. It's like, oh, if they have a dummies book on rage, I'm good. So I'm in this mindful rage. I get in the car, and I drive to Barnes & Noble. And I'm walking in the store in a mindful rage. I'm like, please, no one talk to me. I'm able to maintain. But if anyone talks to me, I might explode. So I go in and I find this really beautiful little book on rage and, you know, how to deal with it. And it was in line with another book that the therapist I was working with had suggested I use. And I was like, oh, okay, so this all aligns. Wonderful. It's perfect. But then I also remember that my ex-wife, I had just talked to her a week or two before, and she was talking to me about Byron Katie. Of course, I didn't know who any of these spiritual teachers were. I didn't know anything. As far as I was concerned, it was either, you know, you're crazy about Jesus or, you know, you're just nuts about spirituality and, you know, you're all just trying to make a buck or whatever. I don't know. So I was like, Byron Katie, I don't know anything. But she had seemed adamant at that point in time, like, oh, you know, you should really listen to some of her stuff. So, all right, cool. So I decided to go ahead and pick up, you know, something from Byron Katie, and I went and got one of her audio CDs. And I can't remember which one it was, like Awakening Your World or something like that. But anyway, I'm still in a rage, complete rage. But at least I have my book and my CD, so I'm like, all right, you know, now we just have to make it through the line. So I got in the car, and I put the CD in, the first CD, and I listened to Byron Katie start talking about what she had gone through before her awakening. And what I heard her describing was my life. I mean, it was almost verbatim. I'm sitting here going, oh my God, she was a, you know, holy shit, and she was dealing with all this. I mean, the words that she used in describing her own experience before her awakening were just like mine. I mean, they were right there. They were arm in arm. And, you know, I'm driving home and I'm listening. And I drove around for a while before I started driving home. Just listen to this, you know, like just the first 30 minutes. But she's talking about her story and I'm driving home. And I remember pulling around the corner, coming up to the house, and I remember her talking about children in socks, something like that. She used to chase her kids around about their socks, but it became this beautiful part of their practice. And I got in the door, and I realized that my rage had subsided. My rage was gone. There was something very peaceful. There was something very peaceful. Having encountered someone who knew my story, but had seen it through their own eyes, had seen it through their own experience. And so I went out back, and I was exhausted. I mean, exhausted. This whole day of all this stuff, I was just thoroughly exhausted. And I sat down in the backyard, and I started breathing. I had been doing a little bit of that. I had been, for maybe about a week to 2 weeks up to that point, I had been kind of getting a little bit back into the Vipassana, but it was different because I was doing it actively. Like, I wasn't sitting and meditating, but I was using the same breathing technique, like in my waking life, in my waking moments. I had just kind of picked it up a little here and a little bit there, and so I was practicing that. So I sat there on the back porch, and I started this breath. And it was really interesting. At a certain point in time, what I can say is that I noticed that everything was completely clear. And the only way to explain is to say there was awareness of awareness. There was awareness of awareness.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the first part of my awakening story. Now, as I said earlier, I hope that there was something in this part of the story that was useful or helpful in some small way. If you enjoyed this podcast, then I invite you to check out my website at awakeningintolife.com, where you can find links to this podcast on multiple platforms, along with videos, articles, and additional information. You can also learn about the work that I do with people and the kinds of services that I offer. Well, that's it for this podcast episode, but please stay tuned for part two of my awakening story, where I will actually describe the initial opening experience and several other very powerful and informative shifts that occurred within the first few days and weeks of this awakening journey. Thank you so much, and until next time, take care and be well.